welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
Speaking with Bruce Gagnon, he's the global coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Welcome, Bruce.
Yes, hi.
And I wanted to start off with a little bit about your background, because it is an interesting history that you've got. You have been a Republican as a youth and then entered the military. You insisted on getting into the military, and then you became a peace activist. How did that come about?
Well, in 1968 actually was my first organizing experience. I was 16 years old, and I was elected the vice chair of the Okaloosa County, Florida. That's up in the Florida Panhandle, the County Young Republican Club, working on Richard Nixon's campaign for president. And in fact, one of my rewards for being one of their bright young organizers stars was to sit next to Strom Thurmond, Senator Strom Thurmond from South Carolina, at a fundraising fish fry that they held in order to support the Nixon campaign. So I came from a military family, a Republican family, and then in 1971, early in 71, I joined the Air Force, but first had to get a waiver to get in because I flunked my physical because of an old football injury, high school football. And when other people were trying to get out of the Air Force, I was trying to get in. But ironically enough, I was sent to a base in California called Travis Air Force Base. It was one of the main airlift bases for the war in Vietnam. And I was exposed to something I had never been exposed to before, because I'd lived behind the fences all my life on military bases. I was exposed to the peace movement, and because there were regular protests at the base, and also, as it turned out, my first roommate was one of the leading organizers in the barracks of the peace movement, the GI peace movement, and so there were meetings in my room quite often. And so after some time, I really changed completely around, and began to dedicate my life to the peace movement, and have since I got out of the Air Force in 1974. I've been doing community social justice and peace work ever since.
So what led you to get involved in this global network, and what is the origins of the global network?
Well, let me first start with a short story. 1982 is the year. There's a huge demonstration in New York City against nuclear weapons. At that time, the United States was getting ready to deploy the Pershing and cruise missiles in Europe, and 750,000 people demonstrated. I didn't go. I lived in Florida, where I live now, at the time, and I was watching the whole thing on C-SPAN. They were covering all the speakers at the rally. And following that, they switched to a right-wing conference, and at the time, Reagan was president, and he had come out with his Star Wars plan. And the speaker at this right-wing conference, it was on C-SPAN, was a speech by Lieutenant General Daniel Graham, who was Reagan's chief head of Star Wars. And someone during his question and answer period asked him, "Aren't you worried about that demonstration in New York today?" And he said, "No, actually, I think it's fantastic. They're out there demonstrating against intercontinental ballistic missiles, and we're moving into space, and they don't have a clue." So at that moment, I really began to see this is where the arms race was heading, and I began to try to learn more about it. And from 83 till 98, I was the state coordinator of the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice, and I began to try to get our organization in Florida and those that we had contact with around the country to understand where the arms race was heading, to begin to work on space issues, which for us in Florida, because of Cape Canaveral, was a natural thing to do. But then in 92, working with a few other people, we created the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, really as a once-a-year meeting where we would bring together the few people around the country that, and a couple people around the world that were interested in space issues, as really a way to just share information with each other. But then 2 years ago, I left the Florida Coalition because it was becoming ever so clear to me that space, that things were really heating up again, and that the Clinton administration, despite claims that they had killed Star Wars, had in fact just renamed it the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization. They had taken the same amount of money that Reagan had was putting into it, $3.5 billion a year, and they moved that over to BMD, and things had continued on and, in fact, were heating up again. So
BMD is the ballistic missile defense.
That's right. And so I came over to the global network 2 years ago, and then for the past year have been going just full bore working on this issue.
Now, the BMD, the Star Wars, a.k.a. Star Wars, is made up of two things, the National Missile Defense and the Theater Missile Defense. Can you distinguish those words?
Yeah. The whole idea about missile defense is to protect us from an attack by a so-called rogue state. They name China, they name North Korea, Iran, Iraq. Someone might try to shoot a missile at us, they say. So the idea would be to have this so-called shield to protect us against attack. National Missile Defense, NMD, is the one that would protect the continental United States, they say. And then the other part, TMD, Theater Missile Defense, would be put on a regional basis. We're talking about deploying it in Taiwan, for example, and it would be dedicated towards protecting people within a theater or within a battlefield area. And so at this time, the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization, made up then of NMD and TMD, is now working on these technologies to put this in place. And this coming June, President Clinton is to give the go-ahead on the deployment of this system. Just the last year, Congress, both in the House and Senate, voted in favor of deployment as soon as technologically feasible. And so it's now up to the president to make this decision when he receives a recommendation from the Congress, from the Pentagon around June. And so we are now building pressure internationally to try to back our government away from this decision.
Now, as the names imply, these are defensive, these are conceived of or being sold to us at least as defensive weapon systems. And certainly you can object to them on the grounds of being a boondoggle, that they're not really going to work, and some of the recent tests have not been very successful. But is there any basic problem, if we could get the technology ironed out, is there any basic downside to having a defensive grid against intercontinental ballistic missiles from rogue states?
Well, I think fundamentally our biggest point of opposition is the fact that it's creating a new arms race. It's going to move the arms race into space. And I was at a Space Congress, as it's called, last year at Cape Canaveral, whereby there were several generals from the Space Command making a presentation on their vision for 2025. And during the question-and-answer period, I was able to actually ask through a written question them about this whole system. And they admitted that it would have offensive applications. Anytime you put lasers in space, they admitted that we could use them for offensive as well as defensive purposes. So it's our opinion, as we've become pretty proficient in the Space Command's documentation, it's right on their website, which you can reach from our website in our link section. And you can go there and find where they talk about becoming master of space, controlling and dominating space, and denying other countries access to space. And so we are now seeing that the Space Command wants to deploy, in fact, offensive weapons in space in order to do all of these things. We believe this will fundamentally alter the course of history by moving a new arms race into space, creating conflict in space that will be heavily nuclearized, because, again, the Air Force in their documents is saying that they would need nuclear reactors in space in order to provide the massive power projection for these space-based lasers and other weapon systems that they envision. So we call this the bad seed. It's a bad seed, as we are now moving off this planet to go out into space, that they are taking this bad seed of warfare with them, and we think that it's very important to stop it. It's our contention that the Pentagon can't come to the American people and say, look, we want your hundreds of billions of dollars to put a new arms race in space. So they've come up with this gimmick of calling it a missile defense to protect us. But in fact, the technologies, the weapon systems, and the most importantly, the military doctrine is very clearly an offensive, a master of space regime.
Now, I'm speaking with Bruce Gagnon, for those of you who just joined us, and he's the global coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Could you give us your website address for those who want to follow along on the web?
Yeah, it's a bit long. They'll need a pen. Why don't we give people just a second to get a pen?
Okay.
So they can write it down. It's not one of those easy ones to remember.
Okay, in the meantime, why don't you tell us about the upcoming demonstration in Washington on April 14th?
Yeah, actually, it's going to be 4 days of protest events in Washington on April 14th through the 17th. This is all in preparation for the upcoming June decision by Clinton on deployment of the ballistic missile defense. We're going to have 4 days of events. On Friday the 14th, we're going to have a demonstration at the Treasury Department to talk about the enormous waste of our tax dollars. Already $120 billion has been spent since Reagan on the preparation for weapons in space. On Saturday the 15th, we're going to have an international conference on the prevention of an arms race in outer space at American University. And we have people actually coming from all over the world that are going to be part of this event. On the 16th of April, we're going to have an international strategy discussion, again at American University, to talk about expanding our global movement against putting weapons in space. And then on the last day, April 17th, we're going to have a Keep Space for Peace lobby day on the Hill in Congress to have people go around and talk to their congresspeople. The first time ever there's been a formal lobby day on just on space issues to talk about how we do not want to see the arms race moved into space.
You want to get us the website again?
Yeah, okay. It's www.globenet.free/online. That's one word, online, .co.uk. And then I'll repeat that. It's www.globenet.free/online.co.uk. And if people would call our office in Gainesville, Florida, we would be happy to send them a packet of information with various things, our newsletter and other documents as well. Our phone number in Gainesville, Florida is area code 352-337-9274. That's 352-337-9274.
Now, you were talking about the weaponization of space and your activism against it. I have been very enthusiastic about space, the peaceful exploration of space. Is the network a part of the progressive left that many progressives seem to be, that believes that the space program is pretty much a waste of money, resources that should be spent on domestic concerns, that we don't have a mission to space, that this is pointless militarism?
Well, we have not taken one definitive position, and I doubt that we ever will, about whether or not there should be a space program or not, because, frankly, our over 100 affiliates around the world have very differing views on that. For example, in Bangladesh, we have an organization that is affiliated with us called the Bangladesh Astronomical Society, and these are people that are very interested in space exploration. But they have joined us because they don't want to see the nuclearization and the weaponization of space. So, and myself personally, I very much am interested in space exploration, but it really comes down to one very important point, and it's the level of maturity that we show as we're leaving this planet, the kind of consciousness we take. It's really similar to Columbus. You know, oftentimes we see NASA use the Columbus mythology to sell what they're doing. We're going out and exploring the new world. But I think we can also look at the Columbus mythology from another point of view. That really, the first thing that happened after Columbus found the new world was that Queen Isabella sent in the Spanish Armada in order to protect those new interests and investments in the new world. And in the Space Command documents called Vision for 2020, they use the very same language. They say that the U.S. Space Command's job will be to protect the new interests and investments in the new space medium as the aerospace corporations now go out and begin to look at mining operations on the moon and Mars. They want to set up military bases on the moon, for example. They want to have the ability to really, if you will, define and control the shipping lanes between the various planetary bodies as the planets are mined. So it's really, for me, a question about the kind of consciousness we carry and what kind of seed we now carry as we leave this planet. And so we believe that until our government and our aerospace corporations, and I say our because we, the taxpayers, are essentially paying the freight on all of this stuff, until they exhibit the kind of maturity that I think is required for this next millennium, then I think we have to say they need to slow the train down. The time has come to create a global consciousness about space. There's so much space junk up there now that one of the Apollo astronauts, Edgar Mitchell, one of the fourth or fifth man to walk on the moon, came to one of our demonstrations a few years ago at the Kennedy Space Center because he wanted to speak out against weapons in space. He said, there's so much space junk up there now. If we allow weapons to be put into space, we'll create so much more space junk that we will literally at some point not be able to get off the planet. So he said, it's not in the interests of spacefaring people to do this kind of thing. So
let's talk about that for a second, because I recently read a series of novels by Ken MacLeod, who's a British science fiction writer. The militarization, weaponization of space is very much, but the militarization of space is very much central to his concerns. And one of the things that was central to his novels was the cascade effect. He proposed, and I guess this is not a new idea, that exploding a couple weapons in space and blowing up a couple of the satellites or other pieces of equipment we have up there would create a wave of small waste, which would start whipping around the world at
18,000 miles an hour.
18,000 miles an hour, and if you get whacked with something even very small at 18,000 miles an hour, you're dead in the water.
Yeah.
So basically, any kind of weaponization of space does actually propose that we wouldn't be able to get off the planet.
That's right. And in fact, there's evidence of this. Just recently, you probably heard that they had to move the orbit of the International Space Station because there was space junk heading its way.
Right.
And prior to the disastrous accident of the Space Shuttle Challenger on its previous mission, it had a windshield cracked when a tiny speck of paint traveling at 18,000 miles an hour hit the windshield, cracked it. Now, if it had been something much bigger, like a bolt or a piece of a satellite, that could have destroyed the Challenger on that mission. So it's not some theoretical argument that astronaut Mitchell was laying out to us, and it's a real situation. And so I think it has to make everyone take a moment of pause. But fundamentally, we must begin to look at space as an environment. You know, 100 years ago, we just dumped industrial sewage and everything else into our lakes and rivers because we believed that dilution was the solution to pollution. And in fact, that's the way we now view space, that it's vast and limitless and nothing can affect it. But as we now get a little bit smarter, we see that, in fact, space is an environment. It needs to be protected, much like a wilderness, because if it's not, it's not going to be useful to anyone.
Now, we have laws, international treaties, and proposed a set of UN-based space law. What's the status of all that? Is the U.S. just ignoring it as we ignore all international agreements?
Well, this is a real big question, and it's not only the UN treaties, it's also treaties that we have, treaty that we have with Russia. Let's start with that one. In 1972, Nixon and Brezhnev signed the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty that basically does not allow either side to expand these kind of ballistic missile defense systems that we are now proposing to do. And if we do move forward with it, it's very clear that we'll violate that. Russia has said that if we go forward and do violate it, that they will, in fact, begin to rearm with more nuclear missiles in order to inundate any system that we might put forward, which means, of course, that we're talking about more instability. So the very people that are saying that ballistic missile defense will make us more secure will be, in fact, creating more instability as a result. The other two treaties that are very important is the 67 Outer Space Treaty at the UN that says no nation shall put weapons of mass destruction into space. And I think it can be the case can be strongly made that moving the arms race into space will be, in fact, putting weapons of mass destruction in space. And then the Moon Treaty, which says no bases or military facilities will be put on the moon. And so and then the other important language in both of those UN treaties is that all of the planetary bodies are the province of all humankind, much like the Law of the Sea Treaty that took years to negotiate at the UN said that the resources, the manganese nodules at the bottom of the oceans belong to everyone on the earth, that no one country or just the seafaring countries could not claim ownership. So the idea is that all the planetary bodies are the province of all humankind or the benefit of all humankind. And now there's language going on. Very clearly, you read it in Space News and Aviation Week and Space Technology. You read it in the Ad Astra, the journal of the National Space Society. You read more and more about the efforts to try to rewrite these treaties to allow claims made by corporations and individuals on the planetary bodies. This is going to create a whole level of international debate and anxiety around the whole issue of ownership and control. So,
well, if you can patent the human genome, why can't you own a piece of Mars?
Well, you know, if you're going to have, if you want to have a willy-nilly, wide open, devil-may-care, you know, kind of warfare scenario for space, then you'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to prevent moving again this bad seed of war and greed and environmental degradation,
nationalism.
If you want to move that into the heavens, or if you want to stop that from being moved into heavens, then you're gonna have to develop some kind of international regime around these issues. And right now, there is international law around this, and the United States is at this point saying we want to change it, and if we have to, we'll violate it.
I'm speaking with Bruce Gagnon. He's with the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. And we just have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to, you know, I'm a longtime leftist, and I am also this technophile. So I joined the National Space Society, for instance, about 5-6 years ago. And when you read through those publications, you very quickly become aware that Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and a lot of these other big corporations are very much involved, just like the tobacco lobbies involved in smokers' rights organizations, the military-industrial complex and its various aerospace components are very much involved in promoting and our vision of space. Do you think that it seems to me pretty difficult, and Mars Society, I think, is falling into this a little bit as well, it's pretty difficult to have a grassroots vision of what we could do with space that isn't shaped by these military-industrial interests?
Well, you're very right, and you're one of the first people that ever I've done a radio interview that had a real understanding that, in fact, all of these aerospace corporations are contributing mightily to these organizations. I think these organizations, by the way, are made up of many good people who want, who have serious interest in, you know, seeing the exploration of space. But a lot of the funding for these organizations is coming from these aerospace corporations that view these folks as their ground troops, as their lobbyists to get a lot of the things that they want for contracts and for, you know, and for their vision of what the way space should be. So I think that's a problem, and I think that the people in the National Space Society and the Mars Society and all these other groups need to begin to develop a lot more independent analysis of what's going on. For example, the whole idea of the space plane that is going to replace the shuttle. A lot of people are supporting that because they think it's, oh, we're going to be used for civilian applications. But the fact of the matter is that it's going to be used for, by the Pentagon primarily, it's going to be used for weaponization. It's going to be used for warfare, for control of space. This recent launch on the Endeavour of this mapping mission, come to find out, $200 million came from the Pentagon. 80% of those new 3D maps are going to be used, classified top secret, and used by the Pentagon for future warfare. So as we become more successful around the world, what is happening is individual citizens, a constituency is being developed of people that are beginning to really see what's going on, that the military is taking over the space program, is directing the future of space operations. And so those that want to see peaceful space exploration are going to need to become more critical, are going to need to separate themselves from the control of the Pentagon and the funding of the aerospace corporations. Otherwise, they're going to have no credibility anymore. And they're going to have to begin to remind people that in 1958, when NASA was created, it was created as a peaceful organization whose job was to do peaceful exploration of space. Well, NASA's been taken over lock, stock, and barrel by the Pentagon, and the majority of the missions anymore are dual use, dual application, where they're doing Star Wars tests. When they did the Clementine mapping of the moon, that was, come to find out, they were doing Star Wars sensor tests on that mission. So these are things that that our constituency are now are learning and teaching, and as that is happening, the interest and the support for the space program is waning. And again, if people want to see a space program, they're going to have to become a lot more independent.
Well, I really want to direct people to your website because you collect an enormous number of links and links directly to the horse's mouth there at the military-industrial complex where they're laying it all out, what their plans are. and also how folks can get involved with this international campaign now for the pacification of de-weaponization of space. And that website, www.globenet.free-online.co.uk. And what's the telephone number again in Florida?
Area code 352-337-9274. Just one last word. We are in a truly historic moment where we have a chance to really determine what kind of relationship we're going to have with space. Are we going to have an arms race in space? Are we going to have war in space? Are we going to look at that full moon on a beautiful night? Are we going to have bases on the moon? Now is the time for people to act. Well, you know, we're not yet behind the eight ball. We do not yet have weapons in space. So we urge people to immediately contact Clinton, contact Congress. No ballistic missile defense system, no weapons in space, no Star Wars, no moving the arms race into space. We need people's help now, today, before it's too late.
I really want to thank you for joining us, Bruce.
Well, thank you very much, and I really appreciated it. And you're very well informed, and your listeners are lucky to have you.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS-FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.